I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Hello, and thank you for joining this afternoon's program of At the Root of It. I'm your host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, broadcasting live out of our studio today in Bushwick at Roberta's Restaurant. And you can listen to today's show via our archives on heritageradionetwork.com in our archive box, as well as on iTunes. And I'm going to begin today's show on the 9th of November with a Week in Wine recap. And in Manchester Evening News, reports of a huge fake vodka factory which has been discovered after a fire at the warehouse. 25,000 liters of counterfeit Smirnoff vodka were unearthed after fire crews were called to a suspicious blaze in Cheatham Hill. They contacted officers from HN Revenue and Customs who stepped in to seize the moonshine. Officials believe the plant at the two-story derelict factory could have been the region's capital of counterfeit booze. It included bottling and labeling machinery alongside vats of counterfeit vodka and could have been used to distribute the contraband across the region. The estimated value in tax evasion alone is more than £240,000. And in the crop report, decanter.com reports that it is Germany's smallest harvest for 25 years after cold weather at flowering and hailstorms affected production. According to the German Wine Institute, quality will be good and the wines will be less full-bodied than recent vintages, exhibiting greater freshness and fruit. The total harvest is 25% down on the 09 vintage, with the hail-affected Pfalz region down 30%, and Germany's largest wine-producing region, the Rheinhessen, falling 22%. The reason for the unusually small yield is mainly due to the reduced fruit set caused by the low temperatures at the time of the blossoming, said Norbert Weber, president of German Wine Growers Association. Producers had been forced to make a strict selection in the vineyards due to an extremely cool and damp fall, and production means that grapes have been left on the vine and they will be a little bit less than normal. We're going to take a short break and be back today with my colleague, Suzanne Zudeker. I've had the pleasure of working with Suzanne in the past at Passanella and Son Vinters, and now in our work with the Wines of the Jura and Wines of Cahors, amongst other clients. So we're going to talk about the Jura today, a Renaissance region in France. You are listening to At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. Thank you to our sponsor again, Sam Edwards. And for listeners who are joining us, please call in with any questions or comments at 718-497-2128. And a welcome to my guest, Suzanne Zuttaker.
Thanks, Erin. Thanks for having me on the show.
Glad you could make it. Suzanne just recently returned early fall from the Jura exactly. region?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I was there basically the first weekend in September, which was scheduled purposely because there's a big festival called the Fête de Bio, which goes on yearly, and it's kind of to celebrate the harvest. They basically, all the winemakers come together and take the best couple of bunches from their vineyards, put them all together in one huge grape bunch, and then do a huge processional throughout the town of Arbois and finish up in the church there, sort of have a little ceremony celebrating the new harvest and hoping for a good season and a good vintage.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What do you know what they do with the grapes that have been selected
It's a pretty amazing sight to see. I mean, first of all, there's a kind of a process in terms of selecting who's going to participate and then who's actually going to carry this. I think they said it was something like 80 to 100 kilogram huge grape bunch, which is green with a kind of stripe of red grape varietals and then green on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this big harvest that sort of hoists it up at the front of the altar in the church. So, I mean, it's a pretty amazing
wow.
thing. I've definitely never seen anything like it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
no idea what they do with the grapes. So.
Right.
Yeah. That's the bottom line.
Knowing the French, I'm sure they find a use for them somewhere.
Exactly.
Well, let's start off with kind of understanding where the Jura is located in France.
Okay, so it's basically just a little bit north east of Burgundy and on the other side of Geneva, on the other side of the Jura Mountains. So if you could kind of picture a little thin 80-kilometer strip of a wine region, that's what the Jura is.
So it's not too far from the Swiss border then?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you pretty much go over the hill and within like 45 minutes you're there.
Mm-hmm. And how was it when you were there in September? And it was your first time there, right?
It was absolutely my first time there. And some expectations were met. Some expectations were exceeded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've certainly traveled in other wine regions before, predominantly through Italy, but also in a significant portion of France's wine regions. And I mean, it was just magnificent and really beautiful coming mm-hmm. over the hill from Geneva. It was so green. There's all the Franche-Comté in general. I mean, there's the cows grazing. Some lakes, but it was really a gorgeous, gorgeous area.
Nice. And then in respect to what makes the Jura wines unique, as we'll get into, we have three wines to look at today, all of different grape varieties. And there's many different styles of Jura wine, and some of them have really kind of caught on in the States, I'd say predominantly in you know, big markets like New York, where you have a pretty enthusiastic wine consumer base. But they've been having a bit of a stride.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing is, there's so many different types of wines that are coming out of there that I think that there's a lot that the region has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, there's no doubt about it that some of the wines are really unique and are kind of appealing to a little bit more cultish wine community or
sure.
wine geeky community. I don't know if that's whatever, but
that's fair.
Yeah. But I would say that the area is definitely having a resurgence. I mean, you know, today I kind of wanted to focus on some of the indigenous grape varietals there, but there's also Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, which
mm-hmm.
Account for a large portion of the grape varietals that are grown.
Yep. And then there's another name. I mean, you had told me just a couple weeks ago you had gone to a dinner at Alto, and the topic of the evening was yellow wine.
Yeah, well, it was, they've had two. So they had like an orange wine dinner, which was a focus on a lot of the kind of cult wines coming out of Friuli,
yeah.
But then there was another dinner that Levy Dalton had put on a couple weeks prior, which was called Florified, which was a focus on definitely some Vinjon or yellow wine from the Jura, but also it was a combination of that and sherry and kind
uh-huh.
of all wines produced with flor or Sauvoil or depending on the area how they're going to refer.
Yeah.
So basically, to explain a little bit about what that is, in making the wines in the Jura, specifically, They put the wines into oak barrels, and a layer of yeast will form at the top. And it's basically this protective layer of yeast, which allows an interaction with the wine and oxygen mm-hmm. without oxidizing the wine itself. So it's sure. not a flaw. It's just adds to these, adds really, really distinct and interesting characteristics.
Nutty. Yeah. Little exactly. honeyed notes.
Exactly. So, and then, you know, to get into it a little bit further, I mean, these wines are aging in these barrels for 6 years and 3 months, exactly. And really, they don't do anything to it. So when I was talking to some of the winemakers, I mean, they were just explaining the level of patience that they need in order to make these wines.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike sherry, they're not fortified
right.
as well. So,
right.
you know, they're just fermenting completely dry. They're bone dry and just really intense flavors, really aromatic. But, you know, they kind of let the thing do itself.
Yeah. And then when you were actually visiting there, did you have the opportunity to meet with several different wine producers?
Yeah. You know, it was really interesting the way they set up our trip. And one of the things that I really appreciated, the way they had organized it, was each day we sort of had a day with wine producers. They divided it by varietal and by region. So we would have a day with each of the producers that produce wine from that area mm-hmm. within the Jura and from that grape varietal. So we had a Sauvignon day where we spent some time, you know, throughout different vineyards. And then we had, more specifically towards that, a Chateau Chalon day, which we spent really just focusing on Vingon on the top of the hill. But every producer that produced Chateau Chalon that is in our group was there.
That's very cool. So you get a really understanding of the characteristics of
yeah,
that particular
I mean,
grape.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing with the Jura is that because there are a lot of grape varietals and because there are a lot of small areas and also because it's slightly more obscure, I think it becomes confusing to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this trip and within this group, I think they really wanted us to have a full understanding. And I think that the way of dividing the region that way helped with that.
Yeah, for sure. And then it seems like additionally, as we were talking a bit about before the show began, there's a concentration to making single varietal wines in the Jura now, as opposed to maybe in years and past, decades past, they were doing more blending.
Yeah, I mean, the way it was described by some of the vignerons was that even up until, you know, like it's only been in the last 20 years that they've really focused on single varietal wines. There are a lot more than just these sort of three indigenous grape varietals, aside from Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, that were present and probably in some form still are present. Actually, at the top of Chateau Chalon, they have this little conservatory for all of the indigenous grape varietals in the area so that they keep some kind of strain and even the things that they're really not producing today. But basically the vigneron described it as a twofold decision, kind of universally. There was certainly a market demand and a shift in demand for single varietal wines.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that's true internationally.
Yeah, I mean, internationally, just across the board. And then, you know, they obviously noticed that. I mean, they are tucked away in a little corner, but they're still trying to compete internationally.
Sure.
So there's that, and that, you know, was part of it. And the other part of it was that they really wanted to see what their grapes could do. And they didn't really know. I mean, they had always been kind of blended in, and it was a little bit of a pride issue, a little bit of a curiosity. I mean, this is certainly an art form, I think, winemaking. And, you know, they just said we wanted to see if our grapes were as capable of holding up on their own as they thought that they might be.
Here they are. So Sauvignon is really kind of regarded as, I'd say, the king of grape varieties in the Jura because it is so versatile in its expression.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a pretty tough grape
mm-hmm.
in terms of just the grape itself. But, you know, when it's made into Vingon or even, you know, Sauvignon or Arbois like we have here today, the characteristics are unlike anything else. I mean, I can't think of a wine that expresses itself in the way that this grape varietal does. It has structure. It has incredible longevity. And, really aromatic. It's great.
Great. Well, we're going to take a short break. We have these wines to try and kind of dig into a little bit further. And we also have some Comté cheese, which is, as you could say, after you've been there for a week, probably served at every meal that
every
you had.
Every meal.
So it seems natural to enjoy that with the wine. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to this afternoon's program of At the Root of It. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick here on the Heritage Radio Network and with my guest Suzanne Zudikar. And today we are honing in on the Jura, a small region in France, just kind of bordering the Swiss Alps and close to Burgundy. So we have three grape varieties that I would argue to say many people probably haven't heard of before.
Yeah.
Which Suzanne has brought along to talk about today. But one thing I wanted to just ask before we get into the tasting portion is, I was in Southwest France in May, and I had an opportunity to also meet with quite a few different winemakers in Cahors. And there's a younger generation of winemakers who are fueling kind of the rebirth, I'd say, of that region, who are looking at the market now and seeing how their fathers had made wine in the past and saying, you know what, let me play around with these things a little bit more. Let me, as you said, winemaking is an art and you're always trying to find what really represents best your terroir and be true to your style. So it seems like there is that energy there. And I was curious if your experience having visited the Jura, you did see that element as well present.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the wines that I brought today is made by a brother and sister team, which are, you know, definitely the younger, maybe second or third generation winemaker. But what's interesting is that it's not necessarily reflected on their take. Like, for example, there is in the Jura kind of a, I don't know if I want to call it a debate, but it's certainly a topic, a current topic, which is sort of keeping with the tradition, keeping with that, not topping up the wines, sous-voile, oxidative and nutty quality, or producing a little bit more fresh, you know, slightly, I don't know if I want to say, more easily understood, I think would be a better way to say it. And I don't think that that's reflective, reflected via the age of the winemaker. I mean, there, for example, are some producers that are that have bought vineyards that are not originally from the Jura, and they're kind of making a little bit of a fresher style,
a little more higher acidity, a little more nervy,
You know, a little bit more fruit presence and less of those like tertiary characteristics. But I think that even the younger generations, it just it sort of depends. But a lot of them are really making wine the old school way.
Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the divide is just kind of more personal style than it really is that age.
Yeah. So, what do we have here? We have the a Plusard.
Yeah, so we have a Plusard. This is actually the brother and sister team that I was talking about. It's from Domaine Désiré Petit. But it's Anne-Laure and Damien are the brother and sister. And, yeah, they're just kind of doing it the old school way.
It's interesting because you had you'd brought two reds and one white, and as we were pulling out the wines and the Conte cheese, which is filling up the smell of the studio. Now, the white is an 02 Sauvignon, and that will be tasted last. So there is a tradition, as you've spoken about having that white wine that is a little nuttier with some honeyed notes at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly Château Chalon or Vingt-Jean are at the end of the meal, without a doubt. I mean, that doesn't they don't come before.
Yeah.
But I thought since this is an O2 and it's got some age on it and it really does have a lot of those characteristics that we should drink at last. But yeah, but we have the reds here. So we have Plusard, or sometimes referred to as Poulsard, which is, I think, interesting and confusing. So this is from Arbois. This is from Arbois Poupillon. And in Poupillon specifically, they call Poulsard Plusard.
Okay.
And it really is one and the same, and it just kind of depends on the pronunciation, but frequently in this small area Arbois, which is already a small AOC within a small region.
But it is still the most well-known out of the appellations within the Jura, the Arbois.
Arbois in general, but then, you know, this more specific area, which is actually a hilarious thing. They have a Poupillon sign on the hillside, which is pretty much like the Hollywood sign in Hollywood.
Get out.
Like, that's the kind of pride that they're exuding in this area. There's 200 people that live on top of this hill.
Okay.
Basically.
Wow.
So it's a really small village, but they're definitely really proud.
You'll have to send us some pictures of that.
Yeah, I will.
But this is very nice. This is actually a really nice little spicy fall wine with some cranberry notes, some, you know, nice Bing cherry, high acidity.
Yeah. You know, depending on the producer and where the vineyards are, this is this gets a lot of southern exposure, so mm-hmm. it is able to ripen a little bit, but Poussard can be even lighter than this. I mean, yeah. this has a sort of slight orangey tinge to it, but yep. it can go from that to like really looking like a rosé.
I love this wine.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I mean, I like a lot of what they produce, but
it's very earthy too.
Yeah, which I like. And
then what are some of the dishes you mentioned? There was a particular sausage that you also had at close to every meal. Was the name of that again?
You know, it was cool. We did get to eat at a lot of different places while we were over there. But so then everyone really wants to sort of put their best foot forward. And so there's a sausage called Morteau, mm-hmm. which is served with some kind of boiled potato and a really light cheese, kind of like a fondue sauce.
Yeah.
And it's really considered a specialty, a regional specialty. So we did eat it a lot, quite a bit. It was good. Not as heavy as it looked, but right. still really hearty. I mean, if you picture where this is on the other side, the Swiss are eating raclette and, you know, fondue at this time of year and obviously further into the winter. And then the other thing that we had was Coco Vingon, which you know, probably kind of transferred over more from Burgundy, but since it sits right in the middle, there's a little bit of mix of different variations of dishes from kind of both sides.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we got that.
So would these two reds that you brought, would have these with the Morton sausage? Or
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you could also have Sauvignon with that, but I think I would prefer this. I mean, there's still enough acidity to kind of cut through the sauce, but it's not that the flavors, I mean, the sauces, the cheese sauce is really kind of mild. So yeah. I think it would pair well.
So in the interim of our conversation, we've moved on to wine number two, which is a Trousseau.
Exactly. So, I mean, of the two grape varietals, this is considered slightly heavier, uh-huh. although not heavy by any means whatsoever.
We're looking at these like in the same sort of color realm like a Pinot Noir from Burgundy. Light red, opaque.
Exactly. So this one that we're having right here, it's the 08 from Domaine Baud. It's an eighth generation winemaker right now. It's a brother team. So Jean-Michel takes care of the winemaking while Alain is more in charge of the sort of commercial aspect, which is a common split in terms uh-huh. of...
Gotta do both. This is a business.
Exactly. But Trousseau is a grape varietal. It does really well on the classic blue marl that's over there in the Jura. It's a type of clay, holds on to some moisture, but I think the differentiation of color is based on soil oxidation. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this grape definitely does well in those spots which have the blue marl. Kind of is known to have a gamier nose.
Yeah, a little smoky.
A little funkier.
But tell me if I'm wrong. I am getting like a lot of clove, a lot of kind of spices that you have in a mulled wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. I mean, I think this is very reminiscent of fall as well in terms of...
It's very intriguing. Yeah. This is a wine to watch. Now, do these two reds that you've brought today, do they have distribution in the market?
You know what? I can take a look right here.
Yeah. Because there's always that kind of like, wow, these are cool. And then you get turned on.
Where do I get them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a common aspect.
But having the restaurant experience as well, I think, and, you know, retail, which both of us have, I think that there has been a certain consumer seek out of wines from the Jura, especially.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in terms of if someone were interested that were listening in, I think a great place to go find some wines of the Jura is Chamber Street Wines.
Yeah.
I did a dinner with them when the winemakers were in town and, you know, constantly just receiving their emails as a consumer. I know their enthusiasm and their support, and it's
they have a nice selection. That Absolutely. Is a very, very cool wine.
Yeah.
So let's have a little chunk of this Comté as well when we taste the next wine, which is the Sauvignon from Arbois. This is an 02, so okay. Certainly has had some time in bottle to kind of mature a bit and exactly. take on some of those nutty, more oxidized style.
So I thought this wine would be a cool choice for a couple of reasons. Obviously, a little bit of age on it kind of lets Sauvignon show its stuff a little bit more. I mean, you know, and I think that that's relevant. But I also wanted to bring it. It's from a cooperative over there, which is called Juravinum. But I brought it because there are actually quite a few of cooperativos there. This is from a combination of Voiture and Poupillon. So two really great areas in terms of growing. Voiture is right by Chateau Chalon. And then, obviously, we just had talked about Poupillon. So,
what a cool... this is a great wine.
Yeah.
I mean, having just come back from Jerez and having the opportunity to taste tons and tons of sherry at every meal and visit 9 different bodegas, this is certainly reminiscent of that richness that you can get in that nutty kind of oxidative character. And this pairing with the Comté, which is a very traditional pairing in the Jura, is pretty close to perfect.
Yeah. I mean, they go hand in hand for a reason, definitely. I'd say it's a classic. But I mean, what I love about this Sauvignon, and I just think it's really intriguing wine, and there's definitely, you know, you can keep going back and keep smelling your glass and keep tasting it, and you're going to get something else. But I just love that nuttiness that is not, it's not oxidated. I mean, it's not. It's just, it's just additional characteristics. It's just the way it is. And that's, I just think, really cool and maybe a little bit harder to understand for some people who are.
Well, there's definitely some fruit. Like, I get a lot of pear and apple notes, but on the much more riper kind of style of almost rotten style of apple.
Right, like an apple that you sort of cut and looks a little bit
it
on
falls
the
in the orchard and you walk over and you're like, ooh, that one's bruised and might have a worm coming out of it. But it's coming out a little bit in this glass, which in this case is pretty attractive.
Yeah, I agree. Also, sometimes I go get like a little spice, which I like.
Yep. Again, that nutmeg kind of.
Right.
Yeah, peppery, white pepper.
Exactly.
Where was another cheese you mentioned as well? Was it Morbier, which you had quite a bit?
Exactly. There's a kind of story with that. I don't know if I will do it justice, but there's a gray line that runs through the middle of Morbier, which is like a really soft kind of buttery cheese and has a real smokiness to it. And I think that they put ash, I mean, in the historical times, they had put ash on the certain layer and then put another layer of the cheese on top. Now I think that they sort of create this layer. It's not actually you're eating ash anymore,
but it's sort
of the tradition of it.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a preservation thing, but yeah, I mean, it was a nice play. I mean, Comté is a sort of more sharp, a little bit firmer, so to have both of those cheeses
was a nice contrast.
It was.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of meals and a lot of pairings and a lot of chateau tastings. And it was really cool. One thing that resonated with me and actually some of the other people on the trip and kind of getting some feedback after we got back was, you know, there may be different takes on how they should promote their region and there may be different opinions on the level of traditionalness that they uphold. But there's a real camaraderie there. And I think maybe that's, you know, I don't know why I could speculate that it's because it's a smaller area or, you know.
You got to band together in order
But, you know, not every wine region around does that. And I think that they really do there. I mean, there's a brother/sisterhood, if you will, or whatever, that you really feels like family in the way that they treated outside guests. I mean, it was fantastic.
Excellent. Well, for our listeners, is there another website that you can point them to that will give them some more information on the Jura wines?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They certainly can go to www.jura-vins.com if they want to check some stuff out, and are welcome to also go on our website at Carbonnier Communications, which is www.carbonnier.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. This spread of wine and cheese has been most enjoyable.
Yeah, thank
really,
you so
really impressive.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a
Absolutely.
Pleasure.
Okay, we'll see you next time. Thank you for joining us, and to our producer Jack Inslee and engineer Nat Wiener for orchestrating today's show. And to our listeners, thanks always again for joining in, and our sponsor, Sam Edwards. Appreciate it. See you next week. El antifaz que tu maldad.